close my heart until my automobile for a brand new start, and I'm over it.
All right, there you go. Emily Grogan, once again, I can't help it. I love that song. I'm over it. Great, great tune. I'm Rick Moore, along with Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, Bill Newell, of course, hosting the Sports Writer podcast tomorrow, the Salem News Sports Writers, and more on that later on. Tim, welcome in. How are you?
I'm good, Rick.
Well, life is good, I guess.
Still standing.
Yeah. Did you go to a rollerball match down in Florida or what?
No.
Rollerblade, I guess it's called.
There was a large crowd. Did low divorcery during the day when the crowds weren't as big. So,
Yeah.
But that's as much fun.
Okay, good, good. Well, you know, hopefully it gets better and better and things are getting better. Tonight we have, I'm going to let you talk about our main guest here this evening, Tim, but let me first mention that we'll have our usuals as Gary Larrabee will be standing by. Around 7:30-ish, we'll have Mike Grenier on as well. Gary, golf historian, going to bring us up to speed on the local high school golf tournament that didn't turn out so well for our local Cape Ann guys. Also, check out the pros. Got an interesting take on Gary Player. We'll check in with Mike Grenier. Talk mostly about the Celtics. Maybe talk a little bit of Patriots football. And there was one other thing I wanted to bring up, but I forget. So, Tim, you tell us about our main guest here.
Well, he's a former student of mine. He's writing now for the Boston Globe covering hockey. And his name is Matt Porter. He's a graduate of Gloucester High School. And I just came across his byline on the Twitter feed, and I contacted him. I asked if he'd come on, and he was very happy to agree to come on. So we'll be talking to him in the first segment tonight, catching up. He's written out of town sports for I'm not sure how long, but he's found his way back home. And when I checked his bio, it mentioned the North Shore, it mentioned Gloucester, so I'm thinking, okay, this is going to be my guy. So.
All right, very good. Looking forward to that. And I don't know, Tim. I've been listening to the Boston sports radio, and I wish I hadn't.
You know you shouldn't, Rick.
I know I shouldn't. I'm going to talk to Mike later on about a real pet peeve I have of them with respect to the Celtics. But also, I listened in today for a little while, and one of the channels was just absolutely cutting the Patriots to shreds. And I'm thinking yesterday watching the game, first of all, the first quarter was very difficult to watch. It was a horribly played quarter by both teams. But then it kind of smoothed out. And I'm watching this game thinking, you know what? Boy, this brings me back 20 years ago when they first started their run. It really does.
Yeah. I think they're all afraid the Pats are going to get good again faster than they thought they were. And we'll see. You know, the last few weeks they played better and better. Every week there's some facet of the game that they're doing better. The defense is really coming together in terms of stopping the run and playing the pass a bit better. So we'll see. But you know the inflate gate. You know, still lives with us, even though, Brady's gone, it's still with us. And, listen to all the crap that Mac Jones has taken over the fact he grabbed this guy's ankle.
I know. Okay. It's football. That is funny.
What a friggin' pancake. the guy who pancaked, and I think it was the same guy, who pancaked Harris, on top of the football that knocked him out of the game, and I'm thinking, oh wait a minute, why do we call that for unsportsmanlike conduct? A little excessive force there when he slammed and laid right on top of him. I'm thinking, what is wrong with these guys? You reach for a guy, you grab his ankle. every time there's a leg whip, that guy should be fined.
Yeah.
If they're gonna fine Mac Jones for this, then every guy who leg whips should be fine.
Absolutely.
Everybody who simply every time that it looks like there's a targeting, it's got to be reviewed.
Well, I saw a couple of plays. I almost jumped into the television. that was spearing on the, oh, I guess it's called targeting now, on the other side, and it wasn't called. And then you look, and I wonder where Olszewski was, and I thought because he fumbled, recovered his own fumble, I thought Belichick had benched him, but no, he's got a head injury. And then Damian Harrison has a head injury, and Stevenson has a head injury, so it's like, what the hell?
How do you get those unless you've really been crushed?
Right. Right.
Tackle.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's go back, look at those, and see if there's anything excessive there, and let's start finding some of those Panthers for being dirty.
But I like the way they played the rest of the game. The first quarter I would throw away. That was absolutely awful. And you know, one other thing, talk about criticizing. I was when they had the lineups at the beginning of the game and they showed Isaiah Wynn going into the huddle and going out to left tackle. I was actually yelling at Isaiah Wynn. This is before the game started. You gotta play, get better today. You gotta play better. And then he gives up a sack, a strip sack. Then he gives up, what did he have? Two or three, holding calls and, false starts. Like, oh my goodness. What is wrong with that guy? He's got such potential.
Yeah, well that, you know, potential doesn't get you anywhere unless it turns into reality.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, but, you know, he played guard in college, so he's used to having, I think, more help, but he still hasn't gotten used to playing on the outside.
Well, let's hope it continues to improve. I think they're on a good trajectory.
Here's the end. We have a quarterback now, so we don't have to worry about that. So next year, we draft the best left tackle.
Or find one right now. Man, I don't know.
I know.
Oh, my goodness gracious, yeah. Okay, well, anyway, we'll talk a little bit more about that stuff later on, but I want to get to our first interview here in just a second, so I'm going to take a break, and I'm going to give Matt Porter a call, and wish me luck, Tim, because I'm here running the board by myself.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
Welcome back, everybody, to Josh. What do you call this song, Rick? Not Sure Sports Night.
Whatever you want. I don't care. Call it anything.
Okay.
Just, you know.
Call it anyway.
That's fine.
Okay, for November 8th, and we have on the other end of the line a very special guest, guy that I haven't talked to in a number of years. Last time I was dealing with him, I was grading his papers. And he still managed to make something of himself. And that's Matt Porter, formerly of Gloucester. Matt, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much. I let's get it out of the way first. I'm obviously fighting the urge to call you Mr. Kern.
Yep.
No two ways about that. But you know, Tim and Rick, happy to join you here. It certainly has been a long time, Tim, and it's can't believe it's 20 years that we're coming up on our 20-year high school reunion here, which is just unbelievable to me. But
I was trying to figure it out. So I had you in class in 1999, 2000, because you would have been 2001, would have been the graduate senior year. Not because you usually took AP back then, a junior year.
I was a junior year AP and. Yeah. I hope there's not going to be a quiz, but I feel like I feel like all that stuff is still lodged in my brain somewhere. I have to assume it's there somewhere. Rocks.
Having said that, I can now feel that I've done my job, that you can look back in the depths of your memories and find some of that.
Well, you know, Matt, let me interrupt here, Matt. You're gonna find out how much you remember when you watch Jeopardy. That's where it all comes out.
That's it. That's exactly it. I remember the good times. I remember the laughs in that class. And as far as the facts and figures, I'm sure they're stuck under some rock somewhere in that brain of mine.
So, Matt, let's talk about the journey you've been on. You know, I came across you The Twitter feed saying you were, you know, you were back covering the Boston sports, and I was like, "Whoa, okay." And you're out of town doing the same thing. So after high school, where'd you go to college, and then what was the rest of the journey?
Well, the long and short of it is, when I was really around the time that I was taking your AP class, I started writing for the Gloucester Daily Times. Dom DeCastro was the sports editor then, and I was covering high school sports and kind of training and you know, just knew I always wanted to get into it, even from like age 12 around there. And, you know, I was about 16 and started getting newspaper bylines, which was obviously a thrill at the time. And that, you know, gave me a pretty good package to go to Emerson College, you know, pretty good application there with all the clips that I had. And went to Emerson in Boston, started writing for the Boston Globe midway through that. Had a radio show, had some TV work that I was doing there, and just tried to get experience in whatever way I could for, you know, the journalism path that I wanted to take. And out of college, tried to get a job at the Globe. They weren't exactly hiring, you know, come back with more experience type of thing. And I found myself in West Palm Beach, Florida with the Palm Beach Post. Stayed there 9 years, wound up moving to Miami, met my wife down there. And then in 2018, the Globe had an opening for the Bruins beat, which is the job that I've always wanted. And I was lucky enough to get it, and here I am in my fourth season there.
It's been that long, in fact. So it had to be just this awful for you to accept the job down in West Palm Beach, Florida. You know.
It was fun. It was really fun.
Yeah, but you know, Tim and Matt, one of the things... Excuse me. I learned when I first started, the Boston market is so competitive in all major media, you know, TV, radio, and the newspapers. It's so competitive that we were told, and I used to tell my kids at the high school, you know, if you want to make it, you got to move out of town first because it's so competitive. The only guys who I've ever seen step right into the job are guys whose dads work for the Red Sox or Mike Lynch. I mean, other than that, you got to earn your chops, and you did the right thing.
Yeah, Lynchy, I think he was a Swampscott High quarterback, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, yeah.
Quarterback.
He's real lucky there to, you know, to get that job. But I think I always knew was gonna have to move out, and I was just hoping it wasn't, you know, pick a city, right? Somewhere in the middle of America or like, you know, some kind of small town. I mean, for your first job out of college, I mean, yeah, you can do a lot worse than South Florida. That was pretty crazy down there with the weather.
Went through
a couple hurricanes and, you know, had a great time. I mean, you know, pretty nice when it's January and it's, 70 degrees outside.
Yeah, exactly. And you're complaining about heat and everybody else is looking at you like, why aren't you cold?
I started out covering high school sports down there, and speaking of the heat, I mean, I was on the football field in the dog days of August, where it's 98 degrees and 98% humidity, and you're just you're going through it. But you know, it was a great experience, just being able to cover high school sports.
Matt, we have another student who and this will be I'm going to pull back after this, but we have another student who did sort of the same thing. He went down to Florida. He was introduced to Phil Esposito, who got him a job with Bobby Clark and the Philadelphia Flyers. Barry Hanrahan is his name.
And to this day,
he's the vice president and assistant general manager of the Flyers, and we're so proud of you guys when you do stuff like that.
It's funny, I was, when I first got the Bruins job, I wanted to try to get as good a handle on the league as I could, and I, you know, wound up reading everybody's, you know, all the staff for every team and just looking at the biographies and stuff. And I came across Barry's and I was like, Gloucester, Mass. Okay. You know, like the only hockey person that I really knew from Gloucester was Ben Smith.
Yep.
You know, of course. Other than that, I hope I'm not leaving anybody out, but you know, guys or girls that really, you know, made it to the highest level, that's who I thought of. But you know, Barry, Yeah, you've got a good team over there.
Well, I'll tell you what, if you connect with Barry, he'll give you the best interview and the best information, because he's just like that. He's just a super, super nice guy, and he treats us old Gloucester folk pretty well.
Excellent. That's good to hear.
Mm-hmm.
All right, myself, let's get on your beat. What's wrong with the Bruins?
Well, you know, you look at the schedule right now, I mean, I think they're finding their groove. They've had this weird schedule to start the year where they haven't played. They played the fewest games of any team, and I think that's part of it. They have a lot of new faces. They have two new goalies, really, if you count Swayman, who's coming back after his, you know, little audition last year, and Linus Ullmark, and got a bunch of new forwards. They're trying to work new defenseman Derek Forbort in the mix, so it's kind of a group that really hasn't found itself yet. I still think they're a playoff team, but I mean, I was in Toronto last weekend watching them, and that's a team that really struggles to play defense against speedy teams. So that's kind of something that, you know, they kind of have to get a handle on here. They got two games coming up this week, and one of them is Thursday against Edmonton, Connor McDavid. So that's going to be another big test. So they're not in trouble yet, but it is November. And yeah, you can't fall too far out of the playoff race, which they're, you know, currently, I think, 10th in the East.
I haven't really followed. Where's Tuukka?
Yeah, Tuukka is currently rehabbing. It's his contract expired last year, and, you know, he's been there for 14 years. And he didn't renew his contract. He had hip surgery. And basically the way they left it was, you know, if you're healthy and we need you, then you can come play for us. And they kind of have this understanding that if it comes time when he's recovered in January or February or March, whenever that is, and they need him, then they'll sign him. But other than that, he's essentially not around.
So is he technically a free agent?
He is, but he has said that he doesn't want to play anywhere else. It's kind of like you get this with kind of the guys in their mid-30s, the veterans. You know, he's got three kids. He lives in Newton. You know, he doesn't want to – that's where his stuff is. He doesn't want to move across the country or something like that. So.
Okay. What personal to you? Are you living up in the North Shore, or are you turncoat and went South Shore?
No, I had to come back to the North Shore. When I first got the job, I was living in Brighton. We were living in Brighton, my wife and I, and last year, right when the pandemic started, we got a place in Salem. So we've been here and just love it. It's a fantastic city.
Let me ask you, Matt, go back to the Bruins for a second here. I listen, and I'm sure you must tune in every now and then to the expert talking heads on Boston sports radio, and I'm saying that with my tongue in cheek here.
Not much.
Well, I understand that. I get that. I try to tune in every now and then to see if they have a cogent interview with someone. But at any rate, they were really, in my opinion, disrespecting Patrice Bergeron. And I think that Patrice Bergeron is one of the greatest players of all time and could play in any era with any team. But he's the Bruins' captain. And I think he should have been captain long before Zdeno Chara left the team. But anyway, how's he looking to you? Because they had him, you know, they had him buried in the graveyard, and then I guess it was Marchand, and it might have been one of your stories, who said, this guy does so much for us even if he doesn't score. Don't be talking about that. So what's your opinion of how Bergeron is playing?
Yeah, I was there when Brad was talking about that, and it is funny you say that, because that had kind of come across my radar that Bergeron was being bashed on, I don't know if it was the Sports Hub or EEI or whatever, but it was news to me, because that's not really a part of my diet, I should say,
mm-hmm.
to that. So, I mean, he's had a slow start. It's kind of to be expected. I mean, he's just 36, so it's going to maybe take him, you know, he knows that he has to be fresh for the playoffs. I think that's his main focus. So is he going to, you know, waste all of his bullets in October and November? Probably not. But that being said, he hadn't scored in his first seven games, so it was a little bit concerning, even though, as you mentioned, Ricky, you know, he does a lot of different things. You know, one of the best face-off men, the defense, you know, his defense is incredible. He's always in the right spot. He's moving the puck well, but, you know, just not filling the net. And then, as soon as everybody starts talking about, well, what's wrong with Patrice Bergeron, he goes out and scores four goals in a game.
Yeah.
I think he's doing okay now.
I think so. Yep. Tim?
Well, you know, I've been waiting to talk to you, and I get here, and I go, okay. But it's been so long, and so much has passed between. I've been retired now for 4 years.
I saw that. 28. How's retirement going?
I recommend it for everybody that can get there.
I really can't wait.
And I go back to some a couple of days a week. I was there today. I do a lot of it in the city department. But I'll jump around. And, you know, I only can win when I want to go in, which is the nice part of it. And but just keep my hand in it with the kids and, you know, all my friends on the faculty and all. So. But I just got back from a week in Key West. So.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, that was an easy trip for me when I was living in Miami. That was that's always fun.
Matt, let me ask you about your schedule and how your day goes, because we do have a lot of young guys who are interested in getting into sports, and you know, everybody wants to make it to the major leagues, but there's more than one way to get there, as you have shown. What's your day like at the Globe? What do you do? And tell us a little bit about you know, the schedule, the logistics of what you cover, and how you get your assignments and stuff like that.
Sure, and I should mention anybody that you know wants to, you know, chop it up or you know, wants to know about the business or anything like that, you know, feel free to reach out. You know, you can give them my contact info. But I guess it really depends on the Bruins schedule, at least right now. So I split the beat with Kevin Paul DuPont, who's been around for, you know, 40 something years.
Cool. Yeah.
Incredible guy, incredible writer. And we split, there's a Sunday column that we do, the Sunday Hockey Notes. And if I have the Sunday column, then I'm working on that 2 days a week and then filling in the rest of my schedule with phone calls and some practice time, you know, going over to practices in Brighton. But if I'm on a lot of game coverage that week, then it's a lot of, like this week, for example, tomorrow go to the morning skate in the morning, talk to the players, talk to the coach, see practice, write some early stories for the, you know, we still do a print product in 2021 and, you know, pretty popular considering, the way that part of the business has gone. But you write some early stuff for the print newspaper and for the web. And then I usually come home and, do whatever I got to do here and then go into the game around 5 o'clock and watch the game, write some stories, talk to the people afterwards. And then maybe go to practice the next day. If it's an away game, you know, I'm going in the day before, flying up to the city like Toronto last weekend, you know, going to cover the morning skate and all that stuff. So during hockey season, you're pretty busy and it's a lot of, it's game dependent. You know, you're going to practices, games and morning skates and, making a lot of phone calls on your drive in, talking to sources, talking to, you know, different, analysts, executives, players, all that kind of stuff. And then sometimes some news might break, unfortunately, you know, the Jimmy Hayes stuff happened recently, and that was kind of like a drop everything and do that for a couple days type story. And so you're always busy, and things are ever-changing, even though you kind of have the games to center your work life around. You can be kind of anywhere all at once.
I've got one last question before I give it back to Tim. I'm sorry, Tim, but this is so cool. Before these controlled interviews, these post-game interviews, sports writers were able to go in or, as you said, call on the phone or talk to individual players. Are you able to do that to get stories that not everybody has?
I'm glad you brought that up, Rick. It's kind of one of the things that we're going through right now as a, you know, I mean, particularly in hockey, but with every sport. It was trending this way before COVID, where we were kind of being pushed out of the, you know, out of the locker room. And that is, you know, as you alluded to, that is really your bread and butter as a writer, because that's where your personal connections, you know, your ability to, you know, to get people to like you and trust you and want to open up to you, the questions that you ask in a one-on-one interview, I mean, that's where you get your best stuff. and it's a natural setting, you know, after practice, somebody's, you know, they're putting their helmet and their gloves in the locker room. You say, hey, you got a minute? And, you know, you ask them something, and it leads to things that you never even thought you'd be writing about.
Mm-hmm.
It's the way that I've got my best stories. And, you know, ever since COVID, you know, we've been out of the locker room, and I hope that it does go back one day, because, you know, that's really what I like probably most about the job, is just that ability to make a connection and explore ideas and, you know, take a conversation where you never really expected it. Right now there's a lot of kind of press conferences where everybody's on camera and you're almost performing, you know, you're making like TV content for the teams in a way, which is kind of annoying, but, you know, you gotta find ways to get around that. Obviously you have to adapt, and, I feel like I've been fairly successful at doing that, but always trying to get better.
You know, Matt, that's what I was going to ask about. You know, how special is it to have this unique ability to have access to these pros, the hockey players that you cover? And, you know, at some point you move over to another team sport, but have access not only to the home team guys, but to the other guys around the league, and get to know them on a different level, see them in a little bit of a different light than the everyday fan who's sitting at home watching them on a TV, but never really getting to know that particular player.
Yeah, like I've covered pretty much every sport you can cover, you know, football to soccer, lacrosse, and baseball, basketball. I've covered LeBron, I've covered Super Bowls, I've covered college football national championships. And I don't say that to brag. I say that to say that hockey's what I like best. You know, it's my favorite sport. I consider it my natural language, you know, my first language as a sport. I just like the game, and, you know, I've always played growing up. And so I kind of have that love for it. And I think that really comes across when I get to talk to people that, you know, I don't cover, on a day-to-day basis, because I am curious, you know, to learn more. I mean, these are the best hockey players, the best hockey minds on the planet. And to get to know them, but also, you know, understand a little bit of how they think about the game or what their ideas are, it's just endlessly fascinating to me. So I think I just kind of bring that enthusiasm when I reach out across the league. Basically, you have your contacts, you know, somebody will give you somebody else's number, or you talk to the PR person for that team and they'll give you a player who gives you somebody else, you know, and that's kind of how it goes. And, you know, you wind up just kind of, you're privy to a lot of really cool conversations and ideas. And I think that's, you know, way more. I think maybe if you're not in the business or if you are a fan, you know, I get a lot of, you know, you might think differently of it. I get people saying, you know, well, do you get to meet Brad Marchand and, you know, that kind of thing. And it's like, well, yeah, you do. But, you know, once you get over, you know, I kind of long ago got over that, the starstruck thing. So, you know, once you do that, you get to really connect with them and talk hockey, and that's way more fascinating for me.
Right. All right, Matt, we're going to have to wrap this one up because we have a couple more guests we need to talk to. But what I want to do is I want to bring you back a little bit later in the hockey season and go over where the Bruins are as they head to the back end of the season and hopefully the playoffs.
I will look forward to that. Yeah, reach out anytime.
Excellent. And if possible, I'd like to send you a note. Maybe we can hook up and have a cup of coffee.
Sounds good to me, man.
Great to meet you, Matt. Thank you so much, and congratulations. Can't wait to read the columns, man. Good luck.
All right, Rick and Tim, thanks for having me on.
Thank you. All right, that's Matt Porter, who is the Boston Bruins beat writer for the Boston Globe, and that is a valued and high-profile position, let me tell you. And he was talking about Kevin Paul DuPont, Tim, and, you know, it's just like, damn, those writers are so good at the Globe. They just are.
You know, my first thought was name dropper.
Kevin Paul DuPont, yeah.
Well, if you got to learn from somebody about writing hockey, is there anybody better than Kevin Paul DuPont?
Yeah, but Matt's right there. You heard what he said. You know, after you get that initial, once you're in the business, it's not Star Trek. Hey, these guys are players, and you as a writer have a job to do. And I just hope that the sports writers are able to get back into the trenches and get the stories, the individual stories, because that's where the fun is when they give you stuff that nobody else has, you know. And it takes.
Oh, yeah.
It takes.
I'll tell you, I used to be a faithful reader of the Boston Sunday Globe sports page because their beat writers put together those sports notes for all the different sports.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, you know, basketball, they were there. The hockey, you know, I read those like I was studying for a test. You can learn more from those Sunday notes than anything.
And they're so much fun to read. You got that right. Plus the eloquence of the writing. All right, we'll take a quick break, Tim. We'll come back with Gary Larrabee. This is MSO News Sports, and this is North Shore Sports Night on this Monday evening.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
Time to do it. To do it. Okay, I finally was able to push the right buttons this time after disconnecting Tim. Poor Tim, I throw him off the cliff almost every week. We're back with Gary Larrabee, sports writer, golf writer, sports historian. Gary, welcome back.
Great to be back, Rick. You know, that is gorgeous, gorgeous November day.
Oh, this is great golf weather for the fall golfers, I'm sure. And Tim, did you play golf down there in Florida, Tim?
Rick, I don't even play golf up here anymore.
Okay. All right. Well, Gary's got his agenda on us out in front of us here. So, Gary, where would you like to start?
Let's talk some local golf first, and then we can get to the big boys on the pro tours. But last week we should make note that Gloucester High finished 7th and Rockport finished 10th at the Division III MIAA State Golf Championship, and at Shining Rock out of North Bridge. Not a great showing by either team, especially after Gloucester only lost one dual match in the entire regular season, but so be it. Still a good showing because Rockport won the Baker Division of the KPN League, and so it was still a very good year for both high school teams, and we wish them the best as they hunker down for the winter and get ready for the junior season for the junior players in the coming up in the spring.
Gary,
yes, Tim.
I was surprised by Gloucester's showing too. Beverly did exceptionally well, though.
Well, during the regular season they did, but of course they flopped in the postseason. They didn't even qualify for the state finals at the sectional, and one of their best player, Aiden LeBlanc, he finished, I think, 4th in the state individual final in Division II. But a great regular season. Yes, they were 16-0, won the Northeastern Conference. So a great year for them. And but they can now relax and think about winter sports and the new golf season that will be kicking in hopefully sooner rather than later in the spring. But a lot of interesting things happened, Tim, over the weekend and on the pro tours, and I hope you made note of the most significant issue that took place over the weekend?
Well, I was in Key West, so I can't say I noticed anything of significance.
Well, I hope you brought back. I'm sorry. I hope you brought back one of those all-over tans.
They would run out of sun trying to provide an all-over tan.
Oh, geez.
I understand they misidentified you more than once during the week as a beached whale.
Oh,
so I hope
geez.
You got over that okay.
Luckily, yeah, I've landed on several other shores before, so being recognized was just another honor for me.
Okay, I can appreciate that. Anyways, the big issue over the weekend was the fact, Tim, that for the first time that I can remember, and maybe this happened back earlier in the season, I cannot remember, but I think it's the second time this year, and that's how rare it is, that not a single American player won one of the three major tournaments over the weekend, either the European Tour, the Champions Tour, or the regular PGA Tour. Did you believe that, Tim?
I did see your note on that, and I was rather stymied by that myself. Are we taking the foot off the pedal? Did nobody go play with any seriousness, or is this a sign of things to come where Americans are going to be shut out more often than not, or on a more frequent basis?
Well, top notch players from America were playing both at the Champions Tour event. As in Florida, as well as at the PGA Tour event in Mexico. But the winners were Stephen Alker from New Zealand, a completely new player on the Champions Tour. He won the second of the three Charles Schwab playoff tournaments yesterday. Victor Hovland from Norway. Norway, Tim?
Norway.
He played all night.
He is a five star player though. He's one of the top players out there. He won at the Mayo Kapa Classic in Mexico. He went on the same course last year. He won it 2 years in a row, and he's going to win a major next year, I predict. So don't be surprised if that prediction comes through to him. And lastly, Thomas Peters from Belgium. He won the Portugal Masters over in Europe. But there you go, because we don't expect an American to win over there. But my goodness, all the Americans were shut out this weekend—a rare event indeed.
Now, Gary, what would you say is the major difference, or several differences, between the tour in the United States and tour events in Europe, throughout Europe? It is presentation, course design, difficulty. Are there significant differences in that?
I don't think so. Every golf course is different every week, whether you're playing in America or you're playing in Europe, you're playing in South Africa, you're playing in Australia, wherever you're playing. But the fact, and we've talked about this many times before, but it's coming true again, Tim, that the game has become such a worldwide game, even at the highest level, that we've got people winning these tournaments, you know, from two different continents anyways, from New Zealand. This guy, Stephen Alker, just came on the Champions Tour the last couple of weeks, and he wins this big event this week. And Bill Hovland's been around a while. He's going to be a big, big-time player for many years to come. But it just comes to bear what we've said in the past, that it's not just an American game anymore. We've seen this over and over again for, I'd say, the last 5 to 10 years. We've seen it at the majors, of course. Japanese won the Masters for the first time this past year. I mean, my goodness, it's what's next, Tim?
You know, it kind of draws me back to one of the points that you made to talk about tonight, is that, let's take it back. 60 years ago, there was one guy from overseas, really.
There was just one. That was Gary Player.
Yeah.
You know, and then Chichi Rodriguez, and then
well, Chichi's from Puerto Rico. That's an American position.
Yeah,
he's like an American.
Now, Lee Trevino, where was he from? Was he American?
He, He was American. Yeah. He had Mexican parents, but he grew up in El Paso, so he's an American all the way.
Okay.
But we had, you know, Roberto DiVincenzo was the only South American ever to win a major until others have come along. I can't grab any names at the moment, but the fact remains, this is a worldwide tour, no matter what week you talk about, mm-hmm. no matter what event you talk about. And we'll have to see how this carries out as we continue watching these tours continue to play in the fall.
Yeah, you know, I always marveled at the Gary Player and Roberto DiVincenzo. Such classy individuals. They brought so much to the game of golf, to the style of golf. And I only remember my father getting mad one time at a European. He got mad at Nick Faldo. Because Nick was in the middle of that big winning streak that he was at. He's winning everything. And my father was really tired of him winning.
At least he spoke the same language we spoke, you know. He still speaks the same language. But
yeah,
speaking of all these foreigners, guys, if I might make my one last observation, I came across a wonderful interview on a podcast today with Gary Player, who is 86 years old, and he sounds on this podcast, he sounds like he's half that age. He still has the vitality and the mental awareness to talk about anything golf or non-golf, and he's still one of our absolute treasures in the world of golf. At 86, Gary Player is still an amazing person to listen to and to think about what he did for golf, obviously in South Africa, but for the world.
Did you ever interview him, Gary?
Many times, several times done. In fact, I covered one of his third and final Masters win back in, I think it was 1980 or so. And
yep.
But more recently, Rick, he played in a corporate event for the giant company, SAP, at Turner Hill one day.
Mm-hmm.
And I may have shared this with you in the past, but I'll never forget it. He was finishing up playing with some, you know, an amateur foursome on the last hole. His limousine was waiting for him outside the pro shop, but I asked him if I could have a few minutes to talk a little golf. He said, sure, Gary. We went inside, had a drink. And we spent 45 minutes when he could have given me five.
No, I don't remember that. That's awesome. Wow.
And that was a great Gary Player who didn't have to do anything with me.
Wow.
And no one else would have ever known it except me, but he gave me 45 minutes. That's the kind of person Gary Player still is, because more recently, Rick, he was honored by the Francis We Met Scholarship Fund and named the winner of the Richard Connolly Distinguished Service Award for golf, and I had the pleasure of sitting at his table because he had a couple of empty seats. And he also was there that night with Ron Kirby, Beverly's Ron Kirby, who designed Old Head over in Ireland, Ron's greatest achievement in golf course architecture. But of course, he also got his other great achievement in golf. He got Gary Player started, I should say, in the golf course architecture business mm-hmm. back around 1972, and since that time, Gary has designed over 300 courses
wow.
on five of the seven continents. So I've got some nice feelings about Gary Player.
Yeah, you know, the final comment I have is that when you're able to sit down with a guy like that for 45 minutes and he looks you right in the eye, it's a feeling that that this is a real human being who really cares about things, and it's really cool, isn't it?
It is, but he's such a worldly person, because no one's traveled the world and traveled more miles than the millions of miles than Gary Player. But he does, I must confess, he does love talking, does love hearing himself. but he's a brilliant guy and a fantastic conversationalist, great sense of humor, and a wonderful sense of golf history, and knowing that he's one of the major elements in that golf history.
Great story.
Gary, I want to ask one question. Did he ever give you any clothing tips?
Clothing tips.
Sartorial splendor.
Yes, to wear black if you feel like you're going to win. Always wear black. And but he was great. And I love him to this day, and I'll be as upset when he leaves this earth as I was when Arnold leaves this earth and when the other member of the Big Three, Jack.
Yeah, yeah.
His 82nd birthday comes up in January, guys, when they all leave us. But they're still with us, Jack and Gary, and the Big Three will always be the Big Three in my estimation.
Thank you for sharing that, Gary, man. That's cool. Tim, you all set?
I'm all set.
Okay, all right. Hey, Gary, next week is not a holiday, so we'll do it again.
I look forward to it.
Hey, thank you, Gary, man. It was great stuff. I appreciate it.
Always a pleasure, gentlemen. Stay well.
As you, YouTube. Take care, Gary. Gary Larrabee. I'll get it right this time. Sports historian and golf writer. That was so cool, wasn't it, Tim?
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
I wanted to get to Gary Player as quick as possible because I know. You know, the man just ooh style.
Yeah, yeah, class, and, all class.
Class on the golf course, and it's like, and I go out there and I plan to go, I'm just ruining everything he's ever done to the game.
Okay, all right, we'll take a break, and we'll see if Mike Grainger's around. We'll be right back.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
All right, we are back right now. I'm Rick Moore along with Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. And oh, by the way, don't forget Bill Newell tomorrow. He's got the Salem News Sports Writers podcast. It's going to be a beauty. They're going to talk about all the state tournament games. And of course, it's with executive sports director of the Salem News, Phil Stacey, the assistant editor, Matt Williams, with Nick Giannino, sports writer, also with the Gloucester Times sports writer, Nick Kukuru. And it's all hosted again by MSO's Bill Newell. But right now,
that's a good crew, Rick. I'll tell you, I know all of them very well. A bunch of great guys. So there'll be some good stuff there with
absolutely. Well, yeah. and Matt Porter. I mean, Tim Kearns just introduced us to Matt Porter of the Boston Globe, a former student of Tim's, and boy, following in your footsteps, you guys. It's so exciting to be able to still do this. And before I bring Tim into this, I got to say this. I'm going to start off. By the way, Mike Grainger is with us, okay? He's a sports writer, and he's our resident Celtics analyst. But also we talk a lot of other sports. And Mike, I'm going to go back to sports talk radio. We talked with Matt Porter earlier about the Bruins and how they were speaking on sports radio in Boston about how Patrice Bergeron has lost a step. And then also I listen, and I try not to tune in too often.
Right.
But I did hear about how what Marcus Smart did last week, speak publicly about critiquing Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown publicly, was just so wrong. And Marcus Smart has to go because he's not one of the super scorers in the league, and it's just wrong, blah, blah, blah. I have to say, well, I can say this because I'm old. I love Marcus Smart. I think he's a quintessential Celtic. He bleeds green, man. And I also, I'm a little concerned about the minutes that Al Horford is given, is being forced to play. But I love Al Horford too. And they had two great games last week, one not so good. So anyway, that's where I want to start. I love Marcus
Smart.
Yeah,
sure. I mean, well, you know, you want to talk about silly reports. I just heard an hour or so ago that supposedly, there's no basis of substantiation here, but supposedly the Celtics have talked to the 76ers about acquiring Ben Simmons for Jaylen Brown.
Oh my goodness, really? Yeah.
And yes.
Yikes.
And my deep thought on that.
Yikes.
I wouldn't even give up like Romeo Langford for Ben Simmons.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously Jaylen Brown's out now for a couple of weeks with a hamstring. Okay. So that's bad for the Celtics. He's having a career year. He's averaging 26 points per game. He's off to a great start. But obviously he got banged up. He's out with a hamstring. But who in the world would want to exchange Jaylen Brown, who's a legitimate offensive threat and also kind of a leader for the Celtics, a young leader, for Ben Simmons, who can't shoot the ball and who has done so many bad things for the 76ers? Right now, Ben Simmons is being docked $360,000 per game because he refuses to play. So that one to me came right out of left field, off the wall. And Tim, I don't know how you. There's no way that I would trade a Jaylen Brown or certainly not even a Marcus Smart for Ben Simmons.
Yeah, I just happened to see that on the sports pages tonight, up in a little corner, a little thing. Celtics expressed interest in Simmons, and I'm like, oh, please, God, no, there's enough problems on that team now.
Right.
You know? But, you know, going back, like, look at some of the, on ESPN, the Celtics page, yeah, going back to the kerfuffle of Marcus Smart calling out Brown and Tatum, it's what we've been saying the whole time.
Yeah.
They need to pass the ball. They need to give it up. They just drill down and look for a shot, and everybody else stands around watching them.
Well, you know, it's funny, Tim, because he made that criticism. And if you look at it in the context of what the way, because it was a much larger statement overall than just saying that Tatum and Brown need to pass the ball more. It taken out of context, it looks a little bit kind of bad. However, neither Tatum or Brown has taken this construction criticism very well. They both kind of like, they haven't accepted it and said, yeah, maybe Marcus is right, or yeah, it's a team thing. I know that Brown said he shouldn't have said that, and Tatum saying, I think I know how to play the game. People think I can play the game, and neither one of them is kind of like taking Marcus Smart's criticism to heart and saying, okay, maybe I need to pass the ball a little bit more. So there's a bit of, I don't know, certainly a divide right now on that team, and you hope it doesn't get worse. Sometimes these things fade away after a couple of weeks, and sometimes they fester. So that'll be the next step. Will it fester and affect these guys and their relationship for the rest of the season, or will it all be, if they go on a 4-5 game, it's funny how winning cures a lot of ills, right, guys? If the Celtics go on a 5 or 6 game winning streak, all of this will be, you know, water under the bridge, so to speak. So let's see how it plays out in the next couple of weeks. But obviously, the Celtics are, you know, it'll be much tougher to win without Jaylen Brown for the next, whether it be week and a half or 2 weeks. He's going to miss some time here.
Yeah, you know, and I look back at, you know, at Brown, and his style of play. He's much more understated than Tatum, even though, you know, he can put up the 30 points with no problem. He's not as anxious, it seems, to look for a shot. I mean, he gets it, he drives, he's looking, but it's
right.
Just an understated way that Tatum. Tatum comes down, it's a big bounce in. You know, and he's making a big thing of himself coming down the court, and Jaylen Brown just runs down the court,
right,
and says, "Catch me," and then throws it up.
A good point, and I think there was one game about a week and a half ago. Remember, the Celtics started off 0-for-20 on 3-pointers, and they finished 2-for-26. And on that particular night, I specifically took notice of Jaylen Brown taking the ball to the basket, because the team was not hitting 3-pointers. So Jaylen Brown was taking it to the hoop and trying to draw contact and taking 2-point shots and taking it to the rim and drawing fouls. And Jason Tatum was not doing that. He was settling for 3-pointers. Now, Jason Tatum is starting to come around a little bit. He had a 32-point game the other night in which he shot the ball very well. Up to then, he was only shooting like 27% on threes and 35 or 36% overall. His game was starting to come around a little bit, but over the first several games of the season, the first 10 games, Jaylen Brown's been taken to the basket far more than Jason.
Yeah, I'm very disappointed in Tatum. I really am.
Yeah.
But let me ask you, Mike, I gave you a homework assignment last week.
I have it. I have it right here in front of me.
Okay.
We could talk about the whole, who are the elite teams, perhaps, and who's going to be there come May or June. I mean, okay, if you look at it right now, the 76ers, first of all, are playing 8-2 without Ben Simmons, but now Embiid, obviously a report came out today that he has COVID. He's going to miss at least 5 games.
Mm-hmm.
But they certainly don't need Ben Simmons, or at least if they have Ben Simmons and they can trade him for a usable player, they're going to improve a team that's already looked pretty good here. They have Tobias Harris, who's a very good player. They have some other outstanding players in that team. I think they're going to be in the race Maybe not at the top. Right now they're at the top with 8-2 record. But to me, the team to watch out for in the long run is the Miami Heat. They're in second place, the 7-2. And I'll tell you why. First of all, the core of their team, Jimmy Butler, who is probably just below that superstar level, but a real star player, he's still with them and the focus of that team. And they have Bam Adebayo, one of the best big men, if not the best big man in the league. Great rebounder that can score inside. They have Duncan Robinson, a tremendous three-point shooter, who, by the way, played for the same AAU team as Pat Connaughton. They're good buddies, Duncan Robinson.
Hmm.
He went to Williams College, a Division III school, for the first part of his career. Now he's got a five-year, $90 million contract because he can make the three-pointer. But to me, the reason that they have going to be there at the end is their depth, the quality of depth. Tyler Hero, who the Celtics lost the coin flip, and they ended up taking Romeo Langford, and the Miami Heat took Tyler Hero, who was only averaging like 22 points a game off the bench for the Miami Heat. And they have Kyle Lowry, like a wily, you know, 34-35-year-old veteran who can still score. So they have some really good players, and Victor Oladipo, who is an all-star player, is injured but will be back at some point this year. To me, they have a great chance of going deep in the playoffs come the springtime. I think they're going to be there, they're just going to be really good. And the Bulls, the Chicago Bulls have improved themselves. They're 6-3. They're going to be there in the playoffs. I think the Knicks, with Tom Thibodeau leading the way, again, are going to be a factor in the playoffs. So, meanwhile, the reigning champion, Milwaukee Bucks, however, have the exact record as the Boston Celtics, 4-6. And you say, what's wrong with that team? Well, they basically have four starters out with injuries and or COVID issues. Chris Middleton, who is their second-best player right behind Giannis, a guy who could average 24-25 a game, he's out with injuries and then COVID. And you have Dante DiVincenzo, a starter who got injured at the beginning of the playoffs, still hasn't recovered. And then you have Drew Holiday, who got hurt the very first game of the season and just came back a game or two ago. So they're off to a stumbling start. They're not cohesive right now. Pat Connaughton has been getting some starts, and sometimes he comes off the bench, our local guy from St. John's Prep. He's been playing well. However, this is a banged-up team. Brook Lopez, another starter, seven-footer. He's been out the whole season with an injury. So they are in a injured mode. They'll get all those guys back at some point, and I think come May or June, they're going to be obviously a threat to go deep in the playoffs and maybe to win it all again. So that takes care of the Eastern Conference. Go ahead.
You're the GM of Philly.
I'm sorry?
Boston comes knocking on your door. Hey, how about Brown to Simmons straight up? You going to do it?
No, of course not.
You're not going to take Brown to Simmons?
If you're Philly, you would, yes. Oh, yeah, if you're Philadelphia, you would. If you're Boston, okay. Is that the way you're opposing it, Tim? Opposing it? Oh, yeah. If you're Philadelphia, oh, my God. Not only do you take him, but then you go to church and kneel and thank the Lord, or you go to the mosque, or you go to, you pray in any language, you know what I mean, or in any faith, because.
Oh, you pray in every one of them.
Go ahead.
Well, I was telling you, I was going to ask Tim, what do you give? I'm sorry, I'm talking over you. Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
Philly's position for the postseason, getting rid of Simmons and getting Brown.
Oh yeah, well of course that would improve them. Having Embiid and Brown and Tobias Harris, who's a tremendous scorer, that would be a tough threesome to deal with for opponents in the playoffs. I don't think it'll happen. I think those are unsubstantiated reports. But certainly the 76ers would welcome that trade.
Mm-hmm.
And Brad Stevens would be castigated in the Boston area for making such a trade.
You know, I don't usually grade papers or essays and stuff like that on homework assignments because with mathematics it's either right or wrong. So
right.
I'm going to yield to Tim. Tim, what do you give Mike for a grade on his homework assignment tonight?
Well, I think it was well researched. It was in depth. He had a look. He had plenty of facts. So on the former AP grading scale of 0 to 9, I'm giving it a 9.
All right. All right.
Our guys, do we get to do, I mean, I'm prepared for the Western Conference, but should we save it for next week?
Yeah, please do, Mike, because it's getting a little late, and I think that would be great to go. I kind of glaze over with all the stats and names and stuff, and I'm trying to absorb that. So if you don't mind, can we just push that off a week?
Of course, yes, absolutely. And at this point, the Lakers are just a 500 team, and I mean, we can maybe discuss why they're a 500 team.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, LeBron James is out for a week or so, but they have other issues as well. They have an all-star lineup, and so, you know, on paper, you'd think they would be the team to beat in the entire NBA, but they certainly have not been that team so far.
How many games do the Celtics have this week?
Toronto was a bigger piece of that puzzle than they thought.
Yeah, I'm sorry?
Schroeder was a bigger piece of that puzzle than they thought.
That's true. And you know what? Let's give Schroeder a little credit before we close the deal here tonight. He's been playing extremely well, as whether he's playing the point guard or the off guard. Probably playing better. Well, he is playing better than Marcus Smart.
Okay. All right. Mike, unbelievable stuff. Great fun. I appreciate it. We'll do it again next Monday.
Thank you, guys. And I tell you what, Gary Larrabee talking about Gary Player was very interesting.
Oh, yeah, it was, wasn't it? It was amazing. I didn't know any of that, so it was great to hear.
Yep, it sure is.
All right, Mike, be well.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it. Have a good week.
You too. See you Monday.
All right. Bye.
Take care. All right, Tim, same for you. Man, be well. We'll see you Monday.
God willing and a fair breeze, as Dad used to say.
Yeah, what is it? Fair winds and calm seas.
Yep.
All right, Tim, thank you so much, brother. Talk to you later.
All righty, Rick.
Okay, good night. That is Tim Kearns, our MSO analyst. Of course, before that, Mike Grenier, sports writer, longtime sports writer for the Salem News, among others, and just a fun night. We appreciate it. Tomorrow, it's all high school stuff. We will have a bunch of interviews coming up with football coaches and also with the Hamilton Wenham High School girls soccer coach, Nancy Waddell, as they continue in the MIAA tournament. They will be playing tomorrow, and we'll be chatting with the Danvers High School football coach, along with the Bishop Fenwick High School football coach, and hopefully much more to come. And don't forget the Salem News Sports Writer podcast tomorrow, hosted by Bill Newell, and that'll be dropping around 8 a.m. In the meantime, this is North Shore Sports Night on a Monday night, and on behalf of our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, Bill Newell, and Tim Kearns, I'm Rick Moore. Good night.